I've always said that impeachment is off the table.
Impeachment is deserving. She doesn't have the right to go against the will of the American people and take impeachment off the table.
Has the president committed offenses and planned and directed and acquiesced in a course of conduct which the Constitution will not tolerate? That's the question.
If we have a president who can get away with saying, I'm above the law and I can take the law into my own hands whenever I want and can do anything I want, then we are well on our way to military dictatorship. And that's not what the framers of the Constitution wanted.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. In the 2006 U.S. elections, President Bush's Republican Party lost control of the U.S. Congress, and Democrat Nancy Pelosi became Speaker of the House of Representatives, the first woman to hold this powerful office. Many Americans were disappointed when one of Pelosi's first press statements was that, quote, impeachment is off the table. In other words, she would not try to remove President Bush from office for high crimes and misdemeanors. She said it would take time away from necessary work and would divide the country.
I've always said that impeachment is off the table.
On July 10, 2008, however, Pelosi noted that the House Judiciary Committee may begin hearings on impeachment, the first formal step in the impeachment process. With less than 6 months left in a Bush presidency, it's improbable he could be formally removed from office before his term ends. But many argue that for the good of the country, he must be held to account. Among those is Cindy Sheehan, mother of a slain American soldier who became a leading peace campaigner. Sheehan is now running for Congress against the Speaker of the House in Pelosi's San Francisco district. Here is Sheehan introducing a supporter of her campaign, former U.S. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney.
She was the first congressperson to introduce articles of impeachment against George Bush. And I'd like to introduce my sister, Cynthia McKinney. Cindy Sheehan is my sister, and she's America's next congresswoman. Now, the only elected official that I know of whose approval rating is lower than that of George Bush is Nancy Pelosi. And she has earned every bit of it. Because instead of the Democratic majority voting immediately to bring our young men and women home from Iraq, she voted her and the Democratic Party's complicity in the war, war crimes, crimes against humanity, torture, crimes against the peace. She, instead of immediately passing legislation for a livable wage, she was satisfied to settle for a minimum wage increase. But the unfortunate thing is that you could increase the minimum wage from now until 2013, 70 cents every year, and a family of four would still be in poverty. Obviously, increasing the minimum wage is not enough. Immediately, the Democratic majority in the Congress should have voted to repeal the Patriot Acts. But they did not do that. Instead, they enabled George Bush's illegal and un-American spying on the American people. George Bush has committed crimes against the American people, and the highest crimes that are more than misdemeanors.
That's right.
Not only against us, but against the international community. And impeachment is deserving.
That's right.
Impeachment is deserving.
That's right.
She doesn't have the right to go against the will of the American people and take impeachment off the table. Thank goodness that Cindy Sheehan stepped up and decided that she would run against this woman who has betrayed the very values that the Democratic Party espouses, betrayed her constituents, and betrayed all of us and them, because I didn't go to the polls and voted the Democratic majority into Congress. So now, what is it that we must do? First of all, we must never give up. We must never give in. We must remember.
Former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. She was chosen July 12th as the Green Party's candidate for President of the United States.
Has the President committed offenses and planned and directed and acquiesced in a course of conduct which the Constitution will not tolerate? That's the question. We know that. We know the question. We should now forthwith proceed to answer the question. It is reason and not passion which must guide our deliberations, guide our debate, and guide our decision.
34 years ago, the House Judiciary Committee held hearings on impeachment of President Richard Nixon. Out of 38 members of the committee, two were women. Barbara Jordan, the first black woman elected to Congress from Texas, gave the opening statement, televised to the nation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jordan.
Mr. Chairman, I join my colleague, Mr. Rangel, in thanking you for giving the junior members of this committee the glorious opportunity of sharing the pain of this inquiry. Mr. Chairman, you are a strong man, and it has not been easy, but we have tried as best we can to give you as much assistance as possible. Earlier today, we heard the beginning of the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. We the people. It's a very eloquent beginning. But when that document was completed on the 17th of September in 1787, I was not included in that we the people. I felt somehow for many years that George Washington and Alexander Hamilton just left me out by mistake. But through the process of amendment, interpretation, and court decision, I have finally been included in we the people. Today, I am an inquisitor. And hyperbole would not be fictional and would not overstate the solemnness that I feel right now. My faith in the Constitution is whole, it is complete, it is total. And I am not going to sit here and be an idle spectator to the diminution, the subversion, the destruction of the Constitution. Who can so properly be the inquisitors for the nation as the representatives of the nation themselves? The subjects of its jurisdiction are those offenses which proceed from the misconduct of public men. And that's what we're talking about.
In 1974, the Judiciary Committee approved three articles of impeachment against President Nixon, but within 2 weeks, he resigned. The other woman on the House Judiciary Committee in 1974 was Elizabeth Holtzman from New York. After 2 terms in Congress, Holtzman went on to become a district attorney. Now a lawyer in private practice, she's co-authored a book titled The Impeachment of George W. Bush, A Practical Guide for Concerned Citizens. Elizabeth Holtzman discussed her book with Dr. Shaman Eagle.
What do you see as the impact on American democracy if George W. Bush does leave office without being held accountable?
I think that no president is going to give up the powers that he arrogated to himself, and I think other presidents will follow in his footsteps. And I think it's a sorry day for our democracy, very sorry. And part of the reason to do impeachment is also to educate the American people about what he has done and the dangers that this represents for our democracy. And it doesn't matter if the president is a Republican or a Democrat. We can't ever allow presidents to take the law into their own hands and say, because they are commander-in-chief, they are above any law. That's not what the Constitution meant. The framers understood the dangers of a monarch, and that's why they gave us the impeachment power, and that's why it needs to be used. I think it would be a terrible thing if President Bush were not held accountable during his term of office for what I consider to be high crimes and misdemeanors, and maybe even actual crime, including felonies and misdemeanors.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is that as a former member of the House Judiciary Committee that considered the impeachment of Richard Nixon and voted for the impeachment of Richard Nixon, I have a niche expertise in the impeachment process, mm-hmm. and there's no question in my mind that President Bush has engaged in impeachable offenses. The House Judiciary Committee's proceedings against Richard Nixon were bipartisan, were fully supported by both Republicans and Democrats in the House, conservative Democrats, liberal Democrats, and won overwhelming support by the public as well as a verdict by historians and scholars that it was fair, honorable, and appropriate. And that impeachment proceeding involved an enormous amount of hard work examining the constitutional provision on impeachment, the precedents for impeachment, the ancient British practice on which impeachment was based, as well as considering all the evidence that had been accumulated against Richard Nixon. So that was a very difficult process, a very time-consuming process, but a process that in the end brought the country together because everyone viewed that process as being fair to the president but upholding the rule of law. And what Americans discovered was that more important than any president, more important than any party, was upholding our Constitution and the rule of law. That's what connected us as Americans. That's what kept us together. And that was a very important lesson.
Mm-hmm. Some people did predict the Nixon impeachment would weaken the nation.
Oh, yes, there were people who said the country couldn't withstand it. You know, this is just nonsense. Americans are certainly strong enough to withstand many, many things, including the impeachment of a president. President Nixon, by the way, was elected in an overwhelming landslide only 11 months before the impeachment proceedings started. So what happened was the American people were ready to turn around and say, you know, we voted for Richard Nixon, but more important was preserving our democracy. And so the American people demanded that Congress act on the president's misconduct, abuse of power, arrogance in office, and Congress did.
Right. And how do you see that impeachment for the Watergate affair affecting American standing in the international community, Americans' reputation?
Well, you know, many other nations don't have this kind of system we have. They have a parliamentary system, so if the occupants of government lose confidence of the people, they have a relatively easy way of removing them from office. And I think initially people abroad, internationally, were confused by the process. But I think in the end what people saw was an America that was committed to democracy. An America that was willing to rein in a president who put himself above the rule of law. An America that was dedicated to constitutional decorum.
So in that instance, American ethical, moral, and democratic principles were upheld.
Correct.
What about the Clinton impeachment?
The problem with the Clinton impeachment was it was simply an effort to overturn the results of an election. It was a totally partisan effort concocted in the offices of Tom DeLay and his cohorts, and it never had public support, whereas the Nixon impeachment started not because Congress was engineering that result, but because the American people were so outraged that President Nixon would say, I can't be investigated, I am above the law, that the American people just flooded Congress with phone calls and telegrams. The outrage in every part of this country was so huge that Congress couldn't withstand it and had to respond. The American people supported that impeachment process. The American people never supported the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And also, even if they did or didn't support it, the point is that we didn't have an abuse of power, which is what the constitutional standard is for impeachment. The framers of the Constitution developed an impeachment clause. It says the president can be impeached for treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, we didn't have treason, and we didn't have bribery in connection with the Monica Lewinsky matter. What we had was a president who lied, his conduct was reprehensible, but he didn't use the power of his office. He was not a threat to our democratic institutions. Of course, it was reprehensible. I'm not in any way condoning his conduct. But a high crime and misdemeanor is this great offense that subverts the Constitution. See, the framers were very smart guys. probably if we had some women there, it might have even been a better product. But it's a pretty good product that they came up with. They were smart people who understood how power can be misused. And so they created systems of checks and balances. And they had a lot of checks on the president. They were very worried about a president because they knew about a monarch. They just overthrown King George, and they said, we don't want a repetition of this. So they were very worried about a president, so they had a four-year term of office. He wouldn't have a lifetime term. They also created the right of Congress to override his vetoes. They created a Supreme Court. So there are a lot of checks on presidential powers. But they still were not satisfied. They still said, you know, we are worried that even within a four-year term of office, a president can so abuse the powers of his office, can so subvert the Constitution, that was the standard, subvert the Constitution, that he would have to be removed. We didn't have a subversion of the Constitution in Bill Clinton. We had subversion of morals, subversion of responsible behavior, but we didn't have subversion of the Constitution. He posed no threat to our constitutional system of government. Contrast that with Richard Nixon, who did. Richard Nixon did illegal wiretapping. Richard Nixon created an enemies list of people who disagreed with him and used the powers of government to go after his political enemies, so people who opposed the war, for example, in Vietnam. Richard Nixon ordered federal agencies, in order to protect crimes, his own crimes and crimes of his subordinates, ordered federal agencies to obstruct investigations, lawful investigations. So you had a wholesale abuse of the powers of the presidency by Richard Nixon that warranted his removal from office. You did not have that with regard to the Clinton administration. You do have that with regard to President Bush.
Has Bush acted in such a way that you could directly say there is abuse of power here and a danger to the Constitution?
Right. I would say you have a subversion of the Constitution. I think it's deliberate, it's intentional, and it's dangerous. And that's why I believe he needs to be impeached, one, to stop the abuses, and also to send a very clear message to future presidents, Democrats or Republicans, that you cannot take power into your own hands. You can't put yourself above the law. Now, the ways in which President Bush has abused his power and the grounds for impeachment would include the following, and it could be that there would be more if we had more information. But let's just start with this. The first ground would be, and that's what actually triggered the writing of my book, The Impeachment of George W. Bush, and that was wiretapping in violation of federal law. Now, let's go back to Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon decided he wanted to wiretap some newspaper reporters and some staff members. He didn't have the authority to do it. He nonetheless did it, and his taking the law into his own hands was one of the grounds that the House Judiciary Committee voted for his impeachment on a bipartisan basis. After Richard Nixon engaged in this illegal wiretapping, Congress passed a law called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act in 1978 that said, we have seen what happens when a president on his own can engage in wiretapping, and we don't want to see that repeated. So, all future presidents, you must follow the following procedure, which is that all foreign intelligence wiretaps, or national security wiretaps in shorthand, have to be approved by a court. A special court was created by statute. And by the way, it's very easy to get court approval for wiretaps because up to the time of President Bush, there was something like 19,000 wiretap applications granted to various presidents who had requested it, and only 5 rejected. 19,000 to 5. Not hard to get a wiretap order. And by the way, the wiretap order is in an emergency. It can be gotten after the fact. You can start the wiretap and then go to the court. President Bush said, I don't have to obey this law. I'm commander-in-chief. Well, you know, a president has to obey the law. That's the oath that he takes when he takes office as president. He takes the oath of office to uphold the Constitution. The most essential burden on him is that he has to take care that the laws are faithfully executed. It doesn't say take care that the laws are violated. It doesn't say take care that you put yourself above the law. It says take care that the laws are faithfully executed. And during the Nixon impeachment process, it was very, very clear that what that constitutional oath means is that the president has to obey the law. That's his most central responsibility, not just obey it, but carry it out. Whereas he repeatedly, time after time after time, issued orders for wiretapping without going to a court as the statute required. We also have a Supreme Court case on point, which held that President Truman could not, as commander-in-chief, seize steel mills to keep them going in connection with the war effort. So President Bush's flouting of the law, putting himself above the law, not only stands in violation of the precedent we created during the impeachment process against Richard Nixon, but also stands contrary to a U.S. Supreme Court case about the powers of a commander-in-chief during wartime. President can't assume all the powers of government during wartime. We do not live in a military dictatorship. The president is only commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy and not of the country. That's what the Supreme Court has said. That's the first ground, and then other grounds would include his driving the country into war on a basis of deceptions, misstatements, exaggerations, and lies. I mean, the claim that Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda were in cahoots was a lie and known to the president to be false. The claim that there was a nuclear cloud, the president was at least on notice that the information he was using to tell the American people about that was untrue. His whole team exaggerated without any basis the threat of nuclear weapons. So you had a country being driven into a tragic, catastrophic war, one of the biggest strategic mistakes the United States has ever made in its history, on a basis of lies and deceptions. The president has to be held accountable for that, particularly now that we see that this war is a catastrophic mistake that has cost the American people more than $1 trillion, that's bankrupting our economy, that's making it difficult for us to deal with domestic needs, and that has made us much less safe around the world than ever before. It has attracted all kinds of people to the banner of Islamic fundamentalism, and we see efforts against us and our allies, not only in Iraq, which wasn't an issue before we invaded it, but in Afghanistan again. The president, despite all of his bravado, has never been able to capture Osama bin Laden or his top deputy. In addition to that, we have the president's violation of the laws on torture and mistreatment of detainees, his memorandum withdrawing Geneva Convention protections from al-Qaeda and limiting them for Taliban, his authorization of mistreatment of detainees, his veto of legislation that would prevent the CIA from torturing people. This has created such animosity around the world and has so hurt the image of the United States and so hurt our moral standing and has so hurt our ability to influence and persuade other countries. All these things are consequences. It's not just abstract. We have paid a terrible price for President Bush's violation of the laws of this country, of the rule of law, of his constitutional obligations, and he needs to be held accountable while he's in office for these things. Congress has not done what it needs to do in getting the facts with regard to a whole host of violations. I mean, take, for example, this whole issue of the firing of U.S. attorneys. I believe that firing U.S. attorneys who were going to investigate Republicans could be a crime of obstruction of justice, but the president has refused to permit people to testify about it. Congress has held two officials in contempt, but the Justice Department said we're not going to enforce the contempt laws against them. And Congress has the power, by the way. Congress has the full power to enforce contempt. It just sends out the sergeant-at-arms and arrests the people, Mr. Bolton and Harriet Myers, and puts them in congressional jail. Congress has the power to do it. It did it during the Teapot Dome investigation. So Congress has the power to get some of this information, but it hasn't done it. The American people have been obstructed in the effort to get to the bottom of the president's role and the vice president's role. Withholding evidence can obstruct the investigation. That's what's happening here. I also believe that the president's failure to respond to the Katrina catastrophe, when he was explicitly warned by top officials that a catastrophe was going to happen in New Orleans and that hurricane could breach the levees, he just said, well, let's pray for the people of Louisiana and New Orleans. I mean, that's not taking care that the laws are faithfully executed. The president had the powers. In fact, he's the only person, according to a Republican study of the issue, who had the power to mobilize all federal resources. He failed to do that. He just walked away from the problem. I don't see that a president who's been told that there's a catastrophe about to happen which could affect thousands of lives and billions of dollars in property, and the president just walks away, I think that too is an impeachable offense. I think a president has an obligation to make every effort. When we're talking about vast numbers of human beings whose lives are at stake and billions of dollars of property, he can't just walk away and say, let's pray. So I don't see them praying about Wall Street. I see them taking some very explicit, concrete action. We have a video. The president first denied that he knew about this, but there was a video conference with him. You can see that he is being told there is going to be a catastrophe, Mr. President. That word catastrophe was being used. The levees can be breached, Mr. President. He said, let's pray for the people of New Orleans. Well, I'm sorry. Maybe the president thinks that that is how we should respond, but if that's the case, he ought to step down, because we don't need a preacher-in-chief. We need a commander-in-chief, and we need a president-in-chief. And he has failed dereliction of duty in the grossest sense. It's another ground that I mentioned in the book. He sent our troops into war in Iraq without proper equipment. He sent them without proper body armor. He sent them without proper equipment in terms of armored tanks. I mean, this war was done on a political schedule, not on a military schedule. There was no urgency. There was no immediate need, but the president was operating on a political schedule and put American soldiers' lives in danger because he didn't have proper equipment for those troops. It's scandalous and it's outrageous.
That was Elizabeth Holtzman, interviewed by Dr. Shimon Eagle, host of the Living Well Show on KRZA-FM. Reporting for Wings, I'm Frieda Worden. As mentioned at the start of this program, Congress has voted to send articles of impeachment against President George W. Bush to the House Judiciary Committee. Mainstream press reported this as, quote, burying the matter. However, Committee Chair John Conyers can yet determine if charges will be vigorously pursued.
It is wrong, I suggest. It is a misreading of the Constitution for any member here to assert that for a member to vote for an article of impeachment means that that member must be convinced that the president should be removed from office. The Constitution doesn't say that.
Barbara Jordan.
The division between the two branches of the legislature, the House and the Senate, assigning to the one the right to accuse and to the other the right to judge. The framers of this Constitution were very astute. They did not make the accusers and the judges the same person. We know the nature of impeachment. We've been talking about it a while now. It is chiefly designed for the president and his high ministers to somehow be called into account. It is designed to bridle the executive if he engages in excesses. It is designed as a method of national inquest into the conduct of public men. The framers confided in the Congress the power, if need be, to remove the president in order to strike a delicate balance between a president swollen with power and grown tyrannical and preservation of the independence of the executive.
Reporting for Wings, I'm Frieda Worden. To hear Wings programs again, visit the archive section of the website www.wings.org. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.